This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
People are starving in the street.
Hasadiga Ibo Wai.
Hasadiga Ibo Wai. Hasadiga Ibo Wai.
Hasadiga Ibo Wai. To use the irreverent greeting from the Broadway hit, The Book of Mormon. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio. Your weekly antidote to the religious right, where we are all irreverent.
Are we ever going to say what Hasadiga Ibo Wai actually means?
No, we are not.
We can't say it on this show. I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This show originates on June the 11th, 2001, and broadcasts from the Mic 92.
2001?
What did I say?
Oops.
2011. Yeah, we're a little bit late here. June 11, 2011, and it originates from Madison, Wisconsin. Free Thought Radio also airs in Atlanta, in Grand Rapids, Monterey, New York City, and podcasts all over the universe.
And since it's nearly the official start of summer and the living is getting easy already, as the freethinkers George and Ira Gershwin put it, our broadcast today has something relaxing in store for you.
And we're going to have some fun today by playing from the songbook of the smash Broadway musical, The Book of Mormon. In fact, we just got the CD this week. It wasn't even available the week that we recorded the show. So you heard a little bit of a clip from the show as we started.
And why don't we just start right in? We've talked a lot about this. This is the Broadway hit musical by the makers of South Park. And this is how the musical begins.
Hello. My name is Elder Price, and I would like to share with you the most amazing book.
Hello, my name is Elder Grant. It's a book about America a long, long time ago.
It has so many awesome parts, you simply won't believe how much this book can change your life.
Hello, my name is Elder Green. I would like to share with you this book of Jesus Christ.
Hello, my name is Elder Young.
Hello,
did you know that Jesus lived here in the USA?
You can read all about it now.
Hello,
in this nifty book, it's free, no, you don't have to pay.
Hello,
hello, my name is Elder Smith. And can I leave this book with you for you to just peruse?
Hello,
hello,
hello.
I'll just leave it here. It has a lot of information you can really use. Hello.
Hi.
My name is
Jesus Christ.
You have a lovely home.
Hello.
It's an amazing book.
Bonjour.
Hola.
Ni hao.
Me llamo Elder White.
Are these your kids?
This book gives you the secret to eternal life.
Sound good?
Eternal life.
With Jesus Christ.
It's super fun.
Hello.
Ding dong.
And if you let us in, we'll show you how it can be done.
No thanks.
You're sure?
Oh, well.
That's fine.
So this is the beginning of the smash hit. You got to go see it on Broadway. This is from the cast CD that has recently come out. You can order this online. You can get it digital. You can order online from the Book of Mormon by the makers of South Park. That is a very funny beginning because You know how musicals have chorus lines? Well, these guys are standing out there in their white shirts and
their
black
ties.
Pants, just standing there. Already the audience is laughing. Then they get into a chorus line and sing this. It's so funny.
Well, then that last guy, Elder Cunningham, kind of doesn't fit in and nobody wants to be his partner, you know. But the Elder Price is the other. They're called elders, although they're, what, 18, 19 years old. They're going to be paired together to go on their mission somewhere in the world.
And one of them desperately wants to go to Orlando, and he's the good Mormon, and they get sent instead to this blighted village in
Uganda. Well,
and guess
who he gets paired with? He gets paired with
the misfit
guy, Elder Cunningham.
And so when they get to Uganda, we're setting the scene for this next. We're going to play a little bit more of Hasadiga Ibowai.
In this part of Africa, we all have a say. Whenever something bad happens, we just throw our hands to the sky and say, Hasadiga Ibowai.
Hasadiga Ibowai?
It's the only way to get through all these troubled times. There's war, poverty, famine. But having a saying makes it all seem better. There isn't enough food to eat. Hasadiga Ibowai. People are starving in the street.
Hasadiga Ibowai.
Well, that's pretty neat.
Does it mean no worries for the rest of our days?
Kind of. We've had no rain in several days.
Hasadiga Ibowai.
And 80% of us have AIDS.
Hasadiga Ibowai.
Many young girls here get circumcised. The clits get cut right off.
Well,
and so we say.
Now you try. Just stand up tall, tilt your head to the sky, and list off the bad things in your life.
Somebody took our luggage away.
Hasadiga Ibowai.
The plane was crowded and the bus was late.
Hasadiga Ibowai.
When the world is getting you down, there's nobody else to blame.
Well,
raise your middle finger to the sky and curse his rotten name.
Wait, what?
Hasadiga Ibowai.
Am I saying that?
Hasadiga Ibowai.
Excuse me, sir, but what exactly does that phrase mean?
Well, let's see.
Well, we have to stop it there because we can't play it on the radio. You'll have to see the musical to hear the end of that
song.
Yeah,
I mean, the crowd's in hysterics by the time
this goes much
farther. He says,
raise your finger to the sky.
We're listening to the Book of Mormon. This is from the book Music and Lyrics by Trey Parker, Robert Lopez, Matt Stone. This is the original Broadway cast recording. And Dan, why don't you lead into that next song?
Well, of course, when the Mormon missionaries get there, they have to tell the story of the Mormon faith to these Ugandans. You know, there's this American-African clash, there's this religion clash, and they're trying to explain to these Africans why they should embrace this religion. And they go into a little bit about Joseph Smith in this song called The All-American Prophet.
You all know the Bible is made of testaments old and new. You've been told it's just those two parts, or only one if you're a Jew. But what if I were to tell you there's a fresh third part out there, which was found by a hip new prophet who had a little Donny Osmond flair? Have you heard of the All-American Prophet? Of God. He didn't come from the Middle East like those other holy men. No, God's favorite prophet was all American. I'm gonna take you back to biblical times, 1823. An American man named Joe living on a farm in the Holy Land of Rochester, New York.
You mean the Mormon prophet Joseph Smith?
That's right, that young man spoke to God.
He spoke to God?
And God said, Joe, people really need to know that the Bible isn't two parts. There's a part three to the Bible, Joe. And I, God, have anointed you to dig up this part three that is buried by a tree on the hill in your backyard.
Wow, God says go to your backyard and start digging. That makes perfect sense.
Joseph Smith went up on that hill and dug where he was told. And deep in the ground, Joseph found shining plates of gold.
What are these golden plates? Who buried them here and why?
appeared an angel. His name was Moroni.
I am Moroni,
the All-American Angel.
All-American.
My people lived here long, long ago.
Long ago.
You see my history and my reigns. Please read the words within. We were Jews
who met with Christ, but we were
All-American.
But don't let anybody see these plates except for you. They're only for you to see. Even if people ask you to show the plates to them, don't. Just copy them onto normal paper. Even though this might make them question if the plates are real or not, this is sort of what God is going for.
Joseph took the plates home and wrote down what he found inside. He turned those plates into a book, then he rushed into town and cried.
Hey, God spoke to me and gave me this blessed ancient tome. He hath commanded me to publish it and stick it in every home.
Wow, so the Bible is actually a trilogy, and the Book of Mormon is Return of the Jedi? I'm interested.
So the song goes on explaining the Mormon religion.
That is That's the Book of Mormon according to the South Park.
Yeah, according to Elder Cunningham. That song is called The All-American Prophet from the smash Broadway musical, The Book of Mormon. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. And after the break, we'll listen to a few more songs.
Yeah, stay tuned for Spooky Mormon Hell.
This is Dorothea from Fox River Grove, Illinois, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we're going to continue listening to some cuts from the hit Broadway musical, The Book of Mormon. What do we have next here, Annie Laurie?
I think that we definitely have Spooky Mormon Hell Dream.
Long ago when I was 5, I snuck in the kitchen late at night and ate a donut with a maple glaze. My father asked who ate the snack. I said that it was my brother Jack, and Jack got grounded for 14 days. I've lived with that guilt all of my life and the terrible vision that I had that night. No, please, I don't want to go back.
Down, down, thy soul is cast from the earth whenceforth he fell. The path of fire leads thee to spooky Mormon hell dreams.
Awful sin. I left my mission companion all alone.
Well, this is Spooky Mormon Hell, and you should see the production on Broadway with all of the Jeffrey Dahmers and Hitlers and
whirling Starbucks coffees.
Oh, and flames and demons and all that. This kid's having a nightmare because he had committed sins, this Mormon kid. And these Mormons struggle with their temptations and their identity and who they are, and they're going to go to hell and all of this feelings. And so the Mormons came up with a way to actually deal with all of these problems they're having. And this is expressed in the song called Turn It Off.
I got a feeling that you could be feeling a whole lot better than you feel today. You say you got a problem, well, that's no problem. It's super easy not to feel that way. When you start to get confused because of thoughts in your head,
don't feel those feelings. Hold them in instead. Turn it off like a light switch. Just go click. It's a cool little Mormon trick. We do it all the time. When you're feeling certain feelings that just don't seem right, treat those pesky feelings like a reading light and turn them off like a light switch. Just go bap. Really, what's so hard about that? Turn it off!
Turn it off!
Right? When I was young, my dad would treat my mom real bad. Every time the Utah Jazz would lose, he'd start drinking and I'd start thinking, how am I gonna keep my mom from getting abused? I'd see her all scared and my soul was dying. My dad would say to me, now don't you dare start crying. Turn it off.
Like a light switch, just go flick. It's our nifty little Mormon trick.
Turn it off.
Turn it off.
So turn it off. Well, at the end of the tune, they go into their feelings for other men. They're gay.
One of
the guys is gay, and he says, oops, just turn it off.
And when you're in the theater, they literally turn all the theater lights off. So it's very effective. Every time they say that word, turn it off, everything goes black. So it's fun. And then what do we have left to listen to? We have an excerpt of, I think, the Tomorrow is a Latter Day, which is the final finale.
We are still Latter-day Saints, all of us. Even if we change some things, or we break the rules, or we have complete doubt that God exists, we can still all work together and make this our paradise planet.
You want to stay here with me?
I'd do anything for you. You're my best friend.
Don't worry, little body. Know this much is true. Tomorrow is a latter day, and I am here for you.
Tomorrow is a latter day.
Tomorrow is a latter day.
So who cares what happens when we're dead? We shouldn't think that far ahead. The only latter day that matters is tomorrow. So that's the free thought conclusion of the Book of Mormon.
So there is some free thought to the musical, but they're very compassionate toward the missionaries themselves. We want to thank...
We have coming up Victor Stenger. And tell us who he is, Dan.
Victor Stenger is the author of the new book, The Fallacy of Fine Tuning, Why the Universe is Not Designed for Us. So stay tuned to Free Thought Radio.
Hi, this is Jack Holmes. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I'm a member of FFRF, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Hello, this is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylord.
And we're here in the studio for Free Thought Radio. And we have on the phone with us Vic Stenger. Vic was on the show before a couple years ago when we talked about his book, The New Atheism. And he keeps writing books. Victor J. Stenger is adjunct professor of philosophy at the University of Colorado and emeritus professor of physics at the University of Hawaii. He's the author of the New York Times bestseller book, God, the Failed Hypothesis, in which he actually shows that science can show that God does not exist, and many other books. He wrote a book called Quantum Gods, Has Science Found God? The Comprehensible Cosmos, and a book called Timeless Reality. His new book that we want to talk about today is just hot off the press. It's called The Fallacy of Fine-Tuning, Why the Universe is Not Designed for Us. So welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Vic.
Well, it's great to be here. It's actually, I think, my third time on.
Is it your third time?
Yes.
Oh, maybe that's true, huh? Well, you just keep cranking out the books. You must do nothing but write.
Well, it's fun.
And, well, we want
keeps
also...
busy.
Many people would recognize you because you've coined this very popular phrase that science flies you to the moon and religion flies planes into buildings. Did I say that right? How do you say it?
Well, religion flies you to the moon and... science flies you to the moon and religion flies you into buildings.
Hmm. Yes, and you even put it on one of the virtual billboards that FFRF has up at our website.
I couldn't think of a better one.
No, there isn't a better one. And you're under the famous Freethinkers, so anyone can go and find
that.
Well,
should we tell listeners if they want to make one of their own, go to ffrf.org/out and make one of yours. See if you can do better than Vic Stenger. I doubt you can. Anyway, I was really looking forward to your new book, The Fallacy of Fine-Tuning, because in a lot of my debates, that issue comes up a lot. People like Dinesh D'Souza, whom you write about in your book, and other Christian apologists, they say the likelihood of all these initial constants or values is so improbable that it had to be fine-tuned. And of course, if it's fine-tuned, that means there's a fine-tuner. So you, in your new book, you debunk that, and I really enjoyed reading it because you do completely debunk. Can you explain a little bit about what the issue is and how you go about addressing it?
Yeah, well, the main point is that there are models in physics and in cosmology. In fact, there's two models, one in each, but they're both called standard models right now, that agree with all the observed data. Now, they might not agree in the future, but right now they agree with everything we've been able to see at the smallest distances and out to the largest distances. So these models have... quantities in them. We call them parameters, not constants, because they can vary. And there are about 37 of them all told that we don't know from theory. We have to use data to determine what they are.
I thought William Lane Craig said there were more than 50 of them.
Yes, but I'm not sure what 50 he's referring to. Huh. Maybe including some other things, but. But if you go to fundamentals, these are the two fundamental theories, and they pretty much cover the basic universe. And so the argument that's made is that if they were any slightly different, life wouldn't exist. And in fact, there's some strong arguments that say that where there's several parameters, about five, where not only would... Earthly-like life not exist, But no kind of life whatsoever would exist because the universe would either collapse too soon or for any other number of reasons, there wouldn't be any possibility of life. And so I address those, and I address all the others that are claimed to be fine-tuned.
What are some of those parameters?
Well, like the masses of particles, for example, the mass of electron, mass of quarks and things of that sort, the strengths of the forces between particles, and then there are some other parameters in the physics models. And then you have, in cosmology, you have things like the so-called cosmological constant that determines the energy density of the vacuum and a number of things of that sort. And what you find is that the theists claim not only that these are fine-tuned, but they claim that others are fine-tuned that are not even in these models because they're already set by theory. And I think that's they've been very misleading and maybe just misunderstanding the science to make those kinds of claims.
So are you telling us God had nothing to do with this? It just all happened naturally?
Yeah, I would say so. We have no reason to introduce God. Of course, you can always say God's behind it all, but there's no reason to, because the values of these parameters are just what they should be. Now, there's many other arguments that are used, for example, that there are multiple universes, and that's kind of a no-brainer solution to the fine-tuning problem, because we then just live in the universe, that particular universe that's suited for us. But I don't even rely on that. I don't dispute it. I don't say that it's wrong, but I don't have to rely on it because I can show that within the existing knowledge, we have good reasons for the values that we have. Some of them are fixed. Some of them are within a range that would allow, if not our kind of life. I mean, I agree that our kind of life would not exist with slight changes in parameters, but that doesn't rule out other conceivable kinds of life. And you have to take that into account. And once you do that, you find that there are viable universes for quite a wide range of these parameters.
I was talking about your book with our daughter Sabrina last night at dinner, and about some of the claims that are made that human life would not be possible. And she said, well, that's backwards. Just thinking it all backwards. You're starting with the fact that humans exist and working backwards and looking at how improbable. I think you do it in your book, the improbability that you were even born. If you work it backwards, it does seem unlikely.
Yeah, they're trying to. There are some silly ideas, like, you know, the reason why that the sun has a spectrum of light that it has is so that it would be visible to humans. It would produce visible light for humans. But, of course, humans evolved on the Earth with light from the sun, with the spectrum it has, so our eyes naturally would have evolved to be in that range. So, yeah, it is kind of turned around.
Now, before I read your book, I was relying, and I have been relying a lot on the multiverse because, as you say, it's kind of an easy out. If there are multiple universes, ours just happens to be one of the many, many, many trillions, most of which are stillborn, most of which are dead, and yet it's not a surprise that observers would exist in a universe which allows observers to exist. Isn't that the anthropic principle?
Well, the anthropic principle is not just to apply to multiple universes. It's the idea. Well, there are several versions of it, but the simplest version is just what we said before, namely that you would you'd expect to live in a universe that is suited for life,
yeah.
And so that sets certain boundaries on what some of the physics of that universe is like, and it allows a little bit of a prediction. For the values of those parameters, because after all, we live here, and these things have to be within that range. But it doesn't mean that those parameters are so improbable. And I wanted to comment on something you said at the very beginning about probabilities. You'll find all the time in the theist literature, not just with respect to this question, but with respect to many theological questions, where it'll calculate something and say that's so highly improbable that it has to be God has to be behind it. And the difficulty with that argument is that the only way you can really compare probabilities, I mean, low probability things happen all the time. You just think of the low probability of a particular card coming up just think of the probability. I think the better example is just the probability that you and I exist when you trace back all through to our histories and the chances that there were that our grandfather and grandmother met and so on all the way on through time. If you calculated that probability, it would be infinitesimal, but it still happened. And the point is that low probability things happen, and you only can compare. You can't just rely on an absolute number of low probability. You have to compare it with another probability, the probability of the alternative. What's the probability for God?
Yes.
And in the book, I give an example of two calculations made by two different physicists using the same technique called Bayesian statistics. One was a theist and one was an atheist. And the theist calculated 67% probability that God exists.
That's high.
And the atheist, using the exact same method, following through, step by step, I worked out the steps in the book, the atheist calculated 10 to the minus 17, as I recall it was. One raised to 1 in 10 to the, in 10 raised to the 17th power. So that's a pretty small number. But that shows you how difficult it is to make a statement like whether or not God exists, because we just don't have any data to use to check that hypothesis.
We are talking with Victor J. Stenger, who is adjunct professor of philosophy, and about his new book, The Fallacy of Fine-Tuning, Why the Universe is Not Designed for Us. I'm Annie Lurie Gaylor here with Dan Barker.
That's and still my name.
We are Free Thought Radio, and we'll be right back to conclude our conversation with Victor Stenger.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio. As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Lurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker.
Free Thought Radio is back, and we are talking with Victor J. Stenger, who has a new book. You may remember he's the author of the best-selling God, the Failed Hypothesis. His newest book is called The Fallacy of Fine-Tuning, Why the Universe is Not Designed for Us.
So, Victor, I like how you write in the book about how theists sometimes invoke Occam's razor, which I guess says we should always, everything else being equal, we should pick the simplest answer for something. And they say that multiple universes are unnecessarily complicating and one universe is simple. And how do you respond to that argument?
Well, you know, I use the example of the atomic theory of matter. When atoms were introduced, it increased the number of entities that we had to deal with by a trillion trillion. And yet, it was a simpler theory. And so it's not the number of universes that matter. It's which is the simpler theory. Is a theory of many universes or a theory of just one universe? And to assume only one universe exists is to make an additional assumption, an additional hypothesis that's not required by the data. There's no reason to assume that there's only one universe. And so they're the ones who are violating Occam's razor when they claim there's only one universe.
Yeah, because what force or principle is keeping the number at one and not a greater number or infinity?
Sure, and furthermore, modern cosmology strongly suggests multiple universes. The theories that we've had now since the 80s that agree so beautifully with the data are based on the idea that our universe occurred not just our universe. Universes like ours occurred all the time, just popping out of nothing, basically.
And when they say, well, there's no evidence for multiverses, in your book you come back and say, well, there's a lot of things we take without evidence. For example, quarks. No one's actually seen a quark, and yet don't quarks fit the model or mathematically?
Yeah, sure. There's nothing wrong with postulating things that we haven't detected, as long as they are in principle detectable. The neutrino was another example. It took about 30 years between when the time the neutrino was predicted and when it was finally observed. But it has to be at least in principle observable, and that's the thing that I do add there, that multiple universes are at least in principle observable. That's where people say we would never be able to observe one, and it turns out that there are a number of papers that point out that another universe out there could be affecting us gravitationally and cause a distortion of the cosmic microwave background. And, of course, it was the cosmic microwave background that's told us more than anything else about cosmology, because it's such a fantastically precise way to learn about so much in the universe.
Well, what about the idea of a God? Is a God detectable?
Well, I claimed in my book, God's Field Hypothesis, that the God that most people worship is in principle detectable, should have been detected by now, because that God plays such an important role in the universe that he would have to deliberately hide himself. And of course, he could do that.
But why?
That would be a kind of an unjust God, a kind of an immoral God, because that would mean that God's up there and he's only allowing those people who grovel at his feet and so on to spend eternity with him. And if you're an honest disbeliever that's based your beliefs on the evidence,
but and even there,
how can God hold that against you? For that would be immoral of an unjust to God to hold that against you for just trusting your own intellect.
Even there, he's saying you got to die before you can see me. And you can't come back and prove it.
Well, you guys don't understand. I used to be a preacher, and I understand perfectly, because you guys are spiritually blind, see? God wants to test our faith, and if God made himself evident to us, there would be no faith involved. It would just be a fact of science. So he's really trying to test what kind of character and obedience and faith you have by deliberately hiding himself from you. Can you fit that into a physical model?
Well, I don't know. No, I don't think so, but you can argue that, again, such a God that requires belief in the absence of evidence is not a very nice guy. And if you believe in a benevolent God, then I would think that would not be a benevolent God.
I like how in your book you totally expose these, I guess, hucksters are what we can call them, all these people who pretend to talk in these big scientific terms about the quantum nature of consciousness and reality, like Deepak Chopra. In your book, you're kind of pulling their pants down and saying, hey, you guys got nothing here. How do you respond to people like Chopra saying that the quantum uncertainties prove that consciousness is bringing reality into existence?
Yeah, well, I think it's a misunderstanding of physics. They don't really know what quantum mechanics is all about, what quantum mechanics really says. I mean, to make the long story short, they basically rely on this what's called the wave-particle duality in quantum mechanics, where it seems like an object is either a wave or a particle, depending on what you decide to measure. And so, therefore, it's consciousness that's deciding what reality is. So you can make your own reality. And I just go by the evidence. Again, I'm not really that theoretically inclined. I was always an experimentalist. And I look at the pictures of Deepak Chopra, and he's not gotten any younger or any handsomer over the years, which you think he would if he could make his own reality. But that's a false understanding of quantum mechanics, because waves and particles are just two different properties of the same object. You can mathematically transform from one type to another, from one description to another, and you're still describing the same phenomena.
And because we can't really know some of these properties until we actually observe them, they mistakenly think that it's the observation that's causing the reality then.
That's right. It's not until you observe something that you really know what it is. Until you look at a clock, you don't know what the time is. So That doesn't mean that time is coming into existence when you look at a clock.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just, but these are just descriptions anyway. These are just terms like wave and particle and time and space. They're all part of models that physicists invent. They don't have to have anything to do with, well, they must have something to do with reality because they describe observations, but they don't have to exist in one-to-one correspondence with reality. It doesn't really have to be space out there or time out there. It's just the way we describe the phenomena we see with our own two eyes and with our instruments.
There's a lot of scientists in the world who are brilliant, like you are, and Richard Dawkins and others, but a lot of them are just happy to do their science. But what is it that motivates people like Richard and you to come out and be more aggressive about your lack of faith?
Well, a number of things. I mean, I got started because I didn't like the way I saw science being misused. As it's the example of quantum mechanics, the way it's misused. And so I felt I had to speak up. And then I saw how people were using it to claim that there's evidence for God. Even Leighton Craig's arguments, for example, about the creation. And I felt I had to fight against those because I just saw they were wrong. They were a really misrepresentation of the facts. And so I felt I had to do that. And more recently, I'm realizing more and more that this issue is not trivial. It's not just an academic argument any longer. It's because of the way this nation seems to be becoming a theocracy. I think we have to fight against it.
Well, yes, thank you.
Here. We are. Thank you very much, Victor Stenger. We're out of time. We've been talking with him about his new book, The Fallacy of Fine-Tuning, Why the Universe is Not Designed for Us.
And from now on, my debates are going to be totally different when that issue comes up. Thank you, Vic. We also want to thank...
Thanks for having me.
We also want to thank Brian Tarani, our producer and our engineer. FFRF.org/radio is where you can learn more about our show.
Ask for more information, join FFRF at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Please help us in our work for separation of church and state and to promote non-theism. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.